Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. Visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only Thanksgiving dinner podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser as usual. Plenty to get to. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders, for the first time since 2021, have clinched a home playoff game after they beat the absolute piss out of the BC Lions last week at Mosaic Stadium.
That was no moon.
No, that was one of the bigger beatdowns we've seen from this team in a very long time. So we will get into that. We're going to get into some discussions around quarterback Trevor Harris and the offense in general. And also talk, as everyone's favorite topic around here, of course, the kicking game as well. Before we get to all that, though, was, of course, Thanksgiving weekend. That means Montreal Alouettes and Ottawa Red Blacks played on Monday in the annual game in Montreal, which is a great tradition that I'm glad that the CFL has finally stuck with. Remember, I didn't realize this was such a thing for Montreal until one year they didn't do it, and like Al's fans nearly rioted, which is great. It's absolutely great that someone has picked this up, and the Al's, because like, I mean, the Alouettes kind of get lost in the Labor Day shuffle, so that's great that they have this for them. Yeah. And they seem to be sticking with the Red Blacks going there now, so hopefully that can turn into a thing. Because I remember once when I was on the road covering the Riders, the Riders did actually play in that game in Montreal on Thanksgiving once, which was kind of cool. But I think that was before the Red Blacks came back, or they had just come back, so it wasn't quite what it is now. But hopefully, as the years go on, that'll become known as the tradition, especially if one year both teams can actually be playing at their best come the Thanksgiving.
And sadly, it was completely meaningless outside of, you know, player evaluation and getting ready for the playoffs for both teams. But
the Red Blacks are still playing for a home playoff game, and they still are, in fact.
Right. Yes, I forgot about that. Yes.
Now Toronto holds second in the East, and if Toronto wins this week, coming off the Red Blacks playing on a short week, Toronto will get home in the East semi. So.
Right. Yes. Brain fart on that. I was too busy thinking of all those of the attendance numbers there with everybody out there in what looked like pouring rain, and everybody looked like they were having a great time in Montreal. So that the leagues, I'm glad they've made it a thing. I'm glad Montreal and Ottawa have made it a thing, and it was a good way to
kick off the day. But for me, it was kick off the day because we did our family dinner on Monday.
I was turkey hungover on I was the sober driver, so it was just strictly a turkey hangover on Monday to take that in with a big old plate of leftovers.
Fair enough. So yes, Thanksgiving, of course, on the weekend, and I have an interesting thing that we need to talk about from my family Thanksgiving on Monday.
Okay.
So we're at my father-in-law's house, a large family, extended family gathering, something like 25 of us or so, give or take.
Okay.
So, you know, all the usual stuff, you know, he makes the turkey, the stuffing, the rice dressing for the gluten-free people that need that. And, you know, all the usual fixings, pierogies are there, cabbage rolls are there, there's some salad, you know, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. All of us get in the buffet line, and all of a sudden, a few of us realize, hey, there's no potatoes.
Hmm.
Which, to me, at least me growing up as, you know, a half-Irish boy, the potato is pretty standard. Right. It is like you have to have mashed potatoes with your turkey dinner, be it at Thanksgiving, Christmas, or Easter, if that's what you do at Easter as well.
They go together like peanut butter and jelly.
Exactly. And so, I don't know. I don't know if my father-in-law is being completely truthful as to why the potatoes weren't there. I don't know if he forgot, or if he just didn't want to make potatoes. I mean, if he didn't want to, he could have just said it, and I would have been like, okay, whatever. His theory was, because there were pierogies on the table, which have potato in it, we also did not need more mashed potato. Even though every other time he's made this meal, and everyone else in his family has made this meal, There has also been mashed potatoes. So I don't know why this suddenly changed this time, but it did. And it became not a thing, but there was a few of us giving him some, you know, some friendly jabs for the fact that there were no potatoes on the table. Because to me, the potato is like one of the absolute staple portions of this meal. Not because mashed potatoes are necessarily the greatest tasting thing on earth.
Right.
But because to me, when you add like the turkey, the stuffing, the potatoes, you can dip your bread in it. Like the whole thing is essentially a vehicle for gravy. I want to be able to pour copious amounts of gravy on just about everything except like the salad or a few vegetables.
Well, and like the potatoes kind of like your outfielder, right? Like it's just, it's making the catches. It's got all that gravy. It's just making the plays you need it to make. Right. It's funny. The more you bring this up, the more I'm thinking this is a steamed ham situation. Not to call Bill a liar.
But there was ham. There was actual ham too.
But I'm just thinking, like, Bill realized that, oh crap, there's no potatoes, and Regina doesn't have a Swiss chalet, so it's not like he could go down to the local Swiss chalet and get a whole bunch of potatoes. So I don't want to call Bill Huber a liar.
He is very quick on his feet in terms of thinking about things, so he may have just forgotten. It's possible.
Fair enough, but I'm going with the conspiracy that it's a steamed ham situation. See, I approach my Thanksgiving dinners very differently. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for me, the potato isn't quite as essential.
Hmm. Like I could eat just basically a plate of stuffing and potato and be happy.
See, and I am like Gainsosaurus Rex. I go straight for the proteins, right? Like I'm usually drinking a lot of beer. And we know what happens when I get too much food in there. I get the sneezes, right? So yep. I'm the guy that goes like, okay, you got turkey, you got meatballs, you got whatever. And then I get a plate of proteins. And then I get the pierogies, which, again, Northern Ontario kid, were never part of the dinner. Now I've moved out to Saskatchewan. But these are also homemade pierogies. Like, we're talking, like, honest to goodness, homemade pierogies. So, and we had potato, but like a small helping. But at our dinner, the potato was barely touched. Hmm. So again, I think
we usually run out of potato or come close to it.
Right. And like, I think like three scoops of potato were maybe taken at our dinner because again, you had the homemade pierogies. Now that being said, in the power rankings, if you give me potato over a store-bought pierogi, I take that any day of the week, but give me a good homemade pierogi. And then the other thing too, is we mix it up, is my mother-in-law makes like a mushroom cream sauce for the potato or for the pierogies.
Yep.
And that shit is off the chain, as the kids these days would say. So
yeah, that would be good. I mean, one time we went to the Christmas dinner at Jenny's late grandmother's like retirement home.
Yeah.
And they had this like creamy dill sauce for their pierogies, and it was fantastic.
Ooh. But yeah, I think I'm the take that a lot of Thanksgiving sides, like, just give me more protein. Like, I get it, protein's expensive, but I don't need cabbage rolls. I'm not a cabbage roll
guy. I'm not a cabbage roll guy either, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's not that, like, the flavor of the filling is fine, it's good. The texture of the cabbage has just never been that pleasant to me.
Yes.
Because every so often, like, we'll have, or, you know, we made at family dinners, like, a lazy cabbage roll, where it's basically like a casserole with a bunch of the meat and the rice and, like, shredded lettuce.
Yeah.
Shredded cabbage throughout. Like, that's good. That'll eat a whole plate of.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. That's the easier way to make cabbage rolls, from what I understand.
Like, oh, absolutely. It's there's like basically no labor to it. You dump it all in a thing and throw it in the oven.
And it's significantly better. I'm with you on that. Now, see, salads can go away. Nobody eats salads at Thanksgiving. Like, let's be serious here. Like, nobody's eating a Caesar salad when you got a plate. Your plate is going to be brown.
I didn't. Some people, the salad was asked to be brought, like, Bill didn't make the salad. Like, there was the whole family chat going on of who could bring what.
Right.
So someone brought a salad. So whatever, it's fine.
See, that's the cop out. I'm not great of a cook or a baker, and I don't want to bring pumpkin pie, which, don't bring salad, just bring more pumpkin pie. You can't go wrong with copious amounts of pumpkin pie, because it pairs great with both whiskey and rum.
Yeah, we already had lots of pumpkin pie covered, because
there's no such thing as too much pumpkin pie, gas.
We had like two Costco ones, and someone made a gluten-free one for those people. So
still not enough.
For our family, it was enough. And you don't know Bill well enough to know that he has trouble letting go sometimes. I don't want to get too deep of, like, in terms of like meal planning and meal prep and meal cookery. So the options of what could be brought were fairly limited.
See, that's fair. I'm the same way when I cook, though. I am the exact same. I feel like me and Bill Huber are cut from the same cloth, that it's just like, okay, I know I am cooking. I'm cooking it all. Leave me alone. But unlike Bill, I would not forget the potatoes.
No.
Sorry, Bill.
But I mean, he was a good sport about it. We gave him a rough time about it. And I will probably continue to, especially if at the next family gathering at Christmas there are potatoes.
Oh, God, you are exactly the guy that's going to bring it up every single time. And you know what? It strikes me Bill is just going to give you like a plate of potatoes.
Oh, probably. Actually, what he ended up doing, I didn't complain too much. I just noted that there were no potatoes. But Jenny, her cousin, and one of her cousin's kids were more of the vocal, for lack of potato. So he brought three raw potatoes to all of their sittings and said, here's your potato. And then her cousin's kid actually ate half of that potato raw.
Oh, yes! Love it!
Yeah. And then somehow convinced his sister to later in the evening also bite into the one that Jenny did not eat.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Raw, unseasoned potato, and he apparently enjoyed it. I don't know. Man, 18-year-olds, I don't know what to tell you, man.
Kids these days, maybe it's a new TikTok challenge. Eat a raw potato. So
maybe. I mean, there are far dumber things we've seen people younger than us do on the internet. So
that's fair. And I can tell you, normally, of course, we talk a lot of Rider football at our Thanksgiving dinners. And I can tell you that of all the bad takes, there was good takes. There was a lot of bad takes. Mm-hmm. The best take was that our boy Dave Thomas and Luke Mullender doing an awesome job at play-by-play. So that's all of that was about the only thing that all 20 of us could agree on. I was like,
uniting Saskatchewan. We'll see about that.
Dave. Well done, buddy.
The Saskatchewan Rough Riders are probably actually uniting Saskatchewan right now, for the most part, as they are once again in the playoffs. Not only that, they are going to be hosting a playoff game, and we don't even know which one yet.
Yeah.
We have to wait a whole extra week. The Riders and Bombers both do not play this week, both on a bye. Both get to play the final week of the regular season on the same day. Unfortunately, not at the same time. Like, I just thinking now, the CFL should flex that and make the teams play at the same time like the NFL does.
Oh, 100%.
Like when, like, it's like, okay, all these teams are battling for these playoff positions, so they're all in the early window. All these teams are battling for these playoff positions, they're in the late window.
Yeah.
Like, why not put both games at the same time now? Let's go.
Well, and especially too, because the NFL does such a good job of the win and their in-game always becomes the Sunday nighter.
Yeah, which, like, there is none of that in the CFL this year. Like, yeah, I would put, you got to put the Toronto-Ottawa game on its own because that's, you know, they're playing each other for that spot. Yeah. But then Winnipeg-Saskatchewan, yeah, they should be playing at the same time.
Oh, 100%. Well, because, and I say this as a Bomber fan, and it's going to sound like typical Bomber fan whining here, but it's a huge advantage to Saskatchewan play that game after Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Like you can
they have to set the roster 24 hours before, so there's only so much they can plan for. Like, I assume they're going to plan for having to play everyone and then adjust.
Right.
And then
right.
you'll but see, obviously, I actually kind of hope if and likely if Winnipeg wins, that we see Jack Cohn instead of Shea Patterson. Like, we know what Shea Patterson is.
Yeah.
Give me Jack Cohn, and then let's, you know, there'll be a few spots they'll be able to switch out. And honestly, in the CFL, I mean, the rosters are so small, and there's cap considerations for, you know, the guys who take off, you still have to pay them because they're on the one game, and then everyone that's coming off the practice roster, you'd have to pay a full salary for that game. So there's only so many moves you can generally make anyway in these sorts of games in the CFL, but I imagine they're going to go in with the roster planned out in a way that they are playing to win, and then they'll make changes from there if necessary.
No, certainly, right? Like, and I'm more thinking that they'll have the advantage of being able to rest. You know, you'll be able to take off a guy like Keon Schaefer Baker. You'll be able to, you know, put, like, ideally Cohn in. I'm with you on that. We know what Shea Patterson is. You'll be able to,
I mean, even if they have to win that game, I mean, it's Calgary. They could be up a bunch in the fourth and maybe we get to see them anyway.
that's fair. Although I don't think Calgary has that rollover and die in them like BC did. Woof.
No, like the Calgary Stampeders, for as bad as they are, at least have put up a fight in basically every game they've played.
Yeah, they look like they give a shit, which is wild considering the season that BC was expecting to have.
Yeah. For the record, we are recording this episode earlier in the day than usual, so we are both drinking coffee, so that's where we're at with that for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company.
I did have, I am picking up from our friend Bryce, some Lucky Bastard gin as I am solo parenting this week and will definitely need some putting the kids to bed. For me, not them.
Yeah. The Riders, the Riders, they put the BC Lions to bed Saturday night at Mosaic Stadium. As I've seen this, both of us have seen this team play a lot of games over the years.
Yeah.
And I'm very open about the fact that my memory of games is horrific. I can barely remember what happened early on in the season, let alone years ago. But there are a few games that I can remember them systematically beating down their opponent that badly, especially one that's supposed to be pretty good and was fighting for their lives. It's not like a horrific team came in here. It's not like, you know, Calgary or Hamilton or Edmonton or one of these teams on the final week of the season that's just like, let's just get out of here. We're, you know, trying to just make that happen. But
yeah,
it was something. And the interesting thing is they beat the piss out of them and the score is crazy, but nothing really was jumped out of the page. I mean, Trevor Harris was 25 for 30 for 270 yards and 2 touchdowns, decent day at the office, nothing special. AJ Ouellette rushed for 84 yards. Again, fine, nothing special. Yeah. None of the receivers cracked 100 yards. Granted, it helped that the Riders started midfield most of the game. But it was just a complete all around beatdown that we've been looking for, quite frankly, out of this team for quite a long time, numerous years, where they went into a game where it was, okay, not just we want to win, they probably had to win, I think, in order to win the Grey Cup or get to the Grey Cup even. They had to host at least a home playoff game. Because, the odds out of that 3 spot, while not impossible, are difficult. And they did what they had to do, and they made it all happen. And there was even a point in the game where it was 16-8 just before the half. And you're like, okay, they're kind of letting BC hang around, and then all of a sudden they weren't. There was an interception that led to a touchdown, and then there was another weird interception that Nathan York threw on the next play that ended up in a bonus 3 points, and all of a sudden you're like, okay, this game's over.
Yeah.
We've talked about they've had to put teams away, and there are various ways to do that. You know, in the past, I still question at times, whether against a Winnipeg, say if they need to put together a 5-minute drive to end a game, can they do it? I don't know. We haven't seen them do that. But this was a scenario where they took a team that was playing like dog piss and just stomped on their throat and took out their will to win and even compete in that football game. And they did it basically at halftime, or at least right out of half when PC tried that onside kick, which I actually don't hate. And the execution was just horrific. And yes, it only ended in a field goal, but it just kept extending that lead that BC was just like, okay, we're done on the next week.
Yeah. And that was very much the feel. I remember games better than you, which isn't a very high standard. But no, outside of you've seen them, this team step up back in the last era of good football. You've seen them step up in a playoff game or something like that. I think the only other one I can really think of is when they played in Calgary. I can't remember if it was the West Final, the West semifinal. They wore the Stormtrooper uniforms and just rolled Calgary.
But yeah, that was the 2013 West Final.
That's like the
because that was the week after Darian Durant went I'm just going to win this game myself in one of the most absolute absurd halves of football, fourth quarters even of football I've ever seen from an individual player to win a game in my life.
Yeah,
in any level of football.
100%. I'm with you on that. And that's really the only one that top. And I mean, we might be wrong.
I'm sure there's been games over the years, but in a very specific important moment.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I mean. I know there's been they've throttled Winnipeg a couple times over the years, but this was important, right?
Last playoff games that they won, both of them were basically West semis against Calgary that were just complete gong shows back and forth.
Yeah.
Wild, fun football games, but no one really put anyone away.
Certainly, right? And they've always been in those games, but it was...
Yeah.
I'm with you, and I'm going to take it a step further, and I know people are going to disagree with me on this, and I'm not just saying this as a Winnipeg fan. I think they need to play the West semi to win the Grey Cup, which is wild. But I just think this team clearly thrives on momentum.
That theory will be put to the test this week. Because they will be coming off a bye. So if they come out playing just as well, especially if Winnipeg does happen to lose to Montreal, if they come out just the same, then I don't think they necessarily need to play the West semifinal.
Certainly.
I do believe, I could be wrong on this, but I think every time the Riders have won the Grey Cup, they finished second and hosted the West semi. At least. Maybe third once. I don't think they've ever won the Grey Cup in a year where they hosted the West Final.
That's fair.
I could be wrong in that, though.
Yeah.
I don't know for
sure. No. That would be...
there's only been four times, and I know they didn't in 13. Before that, I don't really remember, so...
Jock, can you get on that for us? I almost need Jock just on speed dial.
It seems like before. A stat that I remember hearing before.
So. Yeah. Which would be accurate. But in terms of regular season performances, though, like it was just they needed to win this to have a chance at having a home playoff game. And they went out and they did the job. And we can all talk about like, oh, BC looked terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they demoralized BC. And
they did, for sure.
Like, it wasn't just like BC was playing bad. It was like BC gave up after the first quarter, right? And I get it. And maybe this comes down to coaching for BC and Rick Campbell's squad. Like, that first interception, I texted him. And I'm like, there's your dumb.
Yep. Like, I tweeted off, it right away. I'm like, well, that's over with. That's easy.
Right? And it goes off a guy's heel, goes off Milligan's shoulder pads, pops right into another. Like,
oh, it also hits Stanback's butt. So it hits Stanback's,
right, yes.
It hit Stanback's heel, goes yes. up, I think bounces off Milligan, bounces off Stanback's butt, bounces off Deontay Williams, and then into AJ Allen's hands.
Like, just, it was funny. It was like, it's like sometimes when you're playing Madden or college football on whatever device you play on, there's those games that you're like, yeah, look at that. The computer's not going to let me win. And it kind of had that vibe. But to take that momentum and roll with it was huge, right? Like, I think Corey Mace, we talked about it at length last week. You know, his first year coaching decisions, he's still learning, right? That's part of it. But in terms of leader of men, you know that guy had this team ready to run through a wall, right? He knew what the stakes were, knows yep. this team needs a home playoff game. Because let's face it, if you don't beat BC here, you've got a very real possibility of, and I know BC has looked like absolute dog shit for a big chunk of the season, especially since Rourke came back. And they seem to be getting soft. I mean, when the defensive coordinator's taking shots at JC Abbott, like you've given up 436 points this season, right? You're in like Edmonton, Calgary territory for points given up. Maybe worry less about what JC's writing and maybe do your job. There's a wild thought, but it just seems like BC is collapsing upon its stuff. Like, you know, we call this Death Star mode. I'm going to call this black hole mode, where it's all the negativity is being crushed into one spot. But that could have all turned around playing in front of 70,000 people at BC Place in a playoff game. Now, they're not going to get to do that. Saskatchewan's going to start on the road, and that is a great way to get momentum going. So it was huge. Like, I don't think we can understate how big this game was. And just now for the mentality, right? If you're a Riders player, the first hurdle was finally winning after Labor Day, right?
Yep.
You could tell that that was in the room, right? Then they won after Labor Day and they started playing pretty good, right? Then the next one was, well, you're winning. And you and I said it. You and I called it, said, well, you're winning, but you're just kind of winning, right?
Yep. And kind of winning against until the Ottawa game against teams that you probably should beat fairly thoroughly.
Exactly. And now this is a game that you thought, okay, BC, Saturday night, basically a home playoff game on the line. For BC, it was,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And for come out and be Death Star mode was very impressive. And they held that aggression to the end. I thought Trevor Harris stayed in too long.
Yeah. At the very least, one play too long. Yep.
Yep. But.
And I mean, if that's basically the only thing you could say about that game from a negative perspective from the Saskatchewan Roughriders, really. Like, yeah. I was sitting there, like, I had basically by the time the whistle blew on the final call of the game, I have the good written, the two dumbs written, and I'm just sitting there like, outside of just putting the BC Lions, I don't know what was bad. And I was like, well, I guess, yeah, the Trevor Harris thing. Like, obviously, and I to Corey Mace's credit, I think after Trevor Harris took that hit, he had a moment of, what am I doing here? You get out of the game. It's unfortunate it got to that point, but luckily for them, Trevor Harris came out of that situation completely unscathed. He's fine. No idea on the word of what the state of the mic in his headset. Does it sound like the it looked like anyway, like he couldn't hear anymore out of that after the hit. So we don't know. We assume Gordy has that under control, but don't know for sure. The interesting thing though, and this is a conversation that continues to happen in Saskatchewan, because yes, we know, as everyone knows, sort of Trevor Harris's career has been mired by the fact that there's this aura around him that he cannot finish drives. That teams that he leads settle for far too many field goals. In Ottawa, that was certainly the case. I think at Edmonton, that was a bit of a case. I think he turned around a bit in Montreal.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a part of a greater conversation, though, around his future, but as well. But I found it fascinating because, again, listening to the post-game shows, people are talking about, you know, they can't settle for so many field goals. They need to score more touchdowns. And sure, absolutely, in a perfect world, you would prefer not to have to kick so many field goals.
Right.
But realistically, the other teams play well, too. And, I mean, this happens.
Right.
It's fine. And, yeah, they had six field goals in the game. You like to see more, but they did score three touchdowns as well. One of them was on defense, of course. But interesting thing is pure offensive touchdowns. So total touchdowns, the Riders are actually third in the league, tied for second in the league, sorry, with Hamilton and Edmonton. So in terms of playoff teams, the Riders are the league leader in total touchdowns scored. Offensive touchdowns, they're tied for third with Montreal.
Wow.
They're with 40 offensive touchdowns. So of the 44 of the touchdowns they have scored this year, 40 of them have been on offense. And since he's come back, Trevor Harris leads the league in touchdown passes and leads out of everyone, out of quarterbacks who are making the playoffs. He has more touchdown passes than anyone.
Well, even if you remove the fact that he's five games behind Bolivia Mitchell and MBT,
yeah,
he's third in the league in touchdown passes.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I mean. Like out of in the entire league, out of quarterbacks that are actually going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
He leads them all in touchdown passes. Wow. So like I understand the frustration with the number of field goals, but that's just what the CFL is.
Yeah.
Like six is maybe a little high. You maybe would have liked to have seen the offense maybe score one more touchdown in that game compared to the field goals,
but on the same
but note, you don't like, need to score 39 points every game to win. Like no, you cut down two field goals, three field goals, they still easily win that game.
Well, and and normally you and I are both of the hyper aggressive always go for it mindset. When you are playing a team that is demoralized and clearly has been punched in the gut and is down on the mat, a great way to get them off the mat is allowing their defense to come up with a third down stop.
Yeah. And I don't think the Riders are really in a, I think there's maybe one scenario where they kicked where I thought they shouldn't have. And I can't remember if it was a punt or not, but otherwise they weren't really in any sort of really egregiously poor decisions from Corey Mace like the week before.
No,
like they just didn't put themselves in that position, which is a great way to avoid that whole scenario altogether.
Well, and that's exactly it. And even more simple numbers. this one's surprising to me. Leading the league in points four. Now, again, one more game than Toronto, and Toronto can score, is the Saskatchewan Roughriders. 446 are tops in the league. Toronto is
teams,
Yeah, but I mean tops in the league in general. Like not even out of playoff teams. Like your next closest. So they've scored 466. Your next
Edmonton has 473 in between.
Do they? Where's that? Oh, Edmonton's got 373.
Are you looking at the right week? Because I have a 473.
No, I'm looking at the CFL regular season standings on their website.
Oh well, the PDF has a completely different thing.
That is hilarious.
And it's not. Oh yeah, it's not even in right order. Like. They have Saskatchewan at 466, Edmonton 473, Toronto 446. So I don't know.
Oh, okay, so I'm assuming.
They've ranked this on points per game. Okay.
Okay, but I'm still assuming in pure CFL fashion that I'm just on the CFL.ca website because I still don't have access to the stats. A 2-year wait for the administrator to get back to me.
Mm. Yes, the offensive points total, not just points for average. The Riders are second at 441, Edmonton 466, and that's just offensive points.
That's crazy. But Saskatchewan on the website right now is 466 and Edmonton 373. So
that's 100 point difference.
Say 373. I'm like, wow, they're up by 100 points. Atta BCFL. Keep it up. Wow. I like it whenever we can dunk on the league a little bit. But again, this is a team that sometimes you got to ask how, not how many.
Yeah, right. And I mean, if you want to talk about offensive touchdowns, then we should be having conversations about the teams they're going to play because the Riders are four ahead of BC and they are five ahead of Winnipeg. Well, and that includes a six touchdown game from Zach Calero skewing things a little bit.
Well, and on the same note, like those are two teams that the offenses look terrible.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
and BC has a very heavily skewed start to the year where they were scoring like 50 points a game for about the first 4 weeks.
Right. Now it is fascinating me, and I'm seeing it on Three Down Nation this morning, is they are turning back to Vernon Adams because Nathan Rourke looked like shit in that game.
I mean, they should have made that switch at halftime, and frankly, they should have made that switch weeks ago.
Yes.
The fact that Rick Campbell has been out here the whole time talking about from the start, it was always, oh, we have two starting quarterbacks. You know, both guys are very important to this team yet. Other than the one time he pulled him when he probably shouldn't have, he's been unwilling to pull the trigger to put Vernon Adams back. And it is clear that Vernon Adams is still the emotional leader of this team.
Yeah.
The fact that the Lions are posting a video of him pumping them up while Nathan just kind of stands awkwardly in the background. This kind of says it all about where this team is at.
Yeah.
And like, it's fine that the, you know, that Vernon can come out and say there's no QB controversy and, you know, things are great and everyone loves each other. And sure, that's fine. Whatever. The fact remains, from your head coach's perspective, you have not been winning football games with a different guy who is not the emotional leader of this team.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Vernon Adams should have been on the field weeks ago. Period.
100%. And Nathan Rourke, and I was texting you about it while I was watching the game. There was a sequence in which he missed two wide open receivers.
Yeah.
Like, and like, we're talking like spiked it in the dirt, wide open receivers, right? Yes. The Riders had put some pressure on him, but it's not like he was under assault the whole night. He just like, the guy basically didn't play a game for, what was it? 400 or 500 days.
Yeah. And been through like a dozen offenses and
exactly.
All over the place. Yeah,
exactly. I don't understand why Rick Campbell, and I get it, he's your shiny new toy and you want to bring him out there, but you know, I think it was foolhardy for them to throw him.
I think the first game makes sense because Jake Della Gala clearly is not good.
Exactly. Yep.
But beyond that, like once Vernon was ready, they should have gone back to him.
100%.
Unless, like, that was the spot where if Nathan comes in, you give him a couple of games while Vernon's still hurt. If Nathan comes in, you know, does his 300 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions, every game, fine. You keep rolling. Everyone's happy. Everything's good. Then the Lions probably roll from there. Instead, right. Nathan comes in and understandably does not play well, has a little bit of up and down over time, but clearly is still getting back into the rhythm of things in the CFL. That's not his fault. That's just the way it is. And it's not Nathan's fault. It's not Vernon's fault. They're trying to do the best they can out of the situation, but it is clear within the locker room now, there is, even though he's only been gone a full season and a bit, there are guys on that team who have not played with Nathan Rourke.
Yeah.
100%. So they are probably, and it's not that they disrespect or dislike Nathan, but they are clearly, well, we're Vernon Adams guys because we played with him. And then there are the rest of the locker room that remembers the time with Nathan. And while at that point, you got a bit of a split probably going on of guys being, okay, we're Nathan Rourke guys. We believe this guy can get it going. And there's the other half of them or a group of them that are probably like, you know, we love Nathan, but we were winning games with Vernon Adams.
Oh, yeah.
And it just becomes a whole thing in the locker room that Rick Campbell has created. And the Lions kind of created by signing Nathan Rourke in the first place. But this all could have been avoided. They brought this 100%. Into their locker room in what is supposed to be like the biggest season in BC Lions history.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you would have come out, and I'm with you, if you would have let him start, because Jake Dalla Gala is not him.
Yeah.
If you would have let him start those two games, VA is ready. Easy coaching. This is VA's team.
Yeah.
VA is going to go. I've got a great backup. But then you're not putting the pressure on Nathan.
No, you're giving Nathan time to kind of ease into it. And then if something happens to VA, hopefully he is prepared and ready to play rather than what we've watched the last number of weeks.
Exactly, which is just not a quarterback that seems ready to play. So now this situation has cost you a home playoff game, which you and I had spoken earlier about how every team that's hosting the Grey Cup should basically go into the luxury tax as often as they can.
Yeah.
But now you just lost, you know, a lot of revenue. I mean, ownership can't be happy when...
Well, I mean, they're still going to get the whole Grey Cup revenue, right?
Right,
a lot of teams don't buy back the playoff game anymore.
Right.
I mean, Amar Dorman might have been because he'd probably try to pack that place by bringing in Taylor Swift or something, but...
Right. But, I mean, on the same note, you just, like, you pack that place, you have 70,000 people at BC. Like, BC Place has such a unique 50. Advantage
yeah.
that you can buy that game back from the league because you can fit 60,000 people in there, and they've done it before.
Yeah.
They've done it this season, right? So, it's created a divide, and now I think, like, I think the thing is with BC... I think this was their bottoming out point. Now they've basically got 2 weeks to figure it out behind VA.
Yeah.
But they're screwed if VA's rusty.
Yeah. They've left him out way too long. So now he comes into this game against Montreal this week. If he's terrible too, then what? Where do you go from here?
Well, and that's it. And you
Chase
got...
Bryce or whatever his name is, this clearly isn't the answer.
No, exactly. And again, and even, and this, And this is a Montreal team that, if I'm Montreal, and it seems like they're taking one out of the Winnipeg playbook.
Yeah.
That it's like, okay, they rested a few guys on Monday against Ottawa, right? They're probably going to rest a few guys this Saturday against BC and then dress the
short
full
week. You'd be foolish to throw in guys this week, quite frankly.
Right, exactly.
Given the quick turnaround.
Exactly. So you got a quick turnaround, a big travel, longest travel in the CFL. And you saw the success of these dominant bomber teams that had first locked up a long time ago. It wasn't, they would not rest guys the last week of the season. They would rest guys the 2 weeks before, right?
Like, well, and yeah, absolutely. And I think to me, now that they know, they kind of hold the cards as to how this could play out. I mean, if you're, and obviously the Montreal OS will have to worry about the Toronto Argonauts. Like, no question about it. That's going to be a tough game for them. I think we can all kind of pencil that in as the East final at this point.
Right.
But thinking forward even, and I'm putting on my tinfoil hat a little bit here. Yeah. The Montreal Alouettes now kind of hold the cards a little bit to what they want to happen in the West and who may statistically have the best chance of playing them in the Grey Cup should they get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they would rather play the Riders or the Bombers, but in theory, they could approach that game trying to influence that a little bit. Now, of course, you still have to execute it and have to play a little bit and, you know, everything. So if they sit absolutely, everyone is clear they want to play the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. If they dress absolutely everyone to play them to the end, they probably want to play the Riders.
And I'm thinking, just based on the way that Montreal's been handling this and the way that Winnipeg has kind of broken the mold of rest everybody the last week of the season the last few years and had success going to four straight Grey Cups after some pretty good regular seasons, I wouldn't be surprised to see Montreal bring out everybody, right? You've got an opportunity to beat up an opponent.
You're sending a message to the West at that point. And you're sending a message to the Toronto Argonauts too, quite frankly. Well, if you come out there and beat the piss out of the Bombers in a meaningless game, that means everything to them.
Yeah. Well, and that's exactly it, right? Like, you get to send that message that, hey, you know, we are for real, which I think Montreal is. Montreal is by far the best team in the league this year. So this Montreal has a chance. It reminds me of, remember when the New York Giants play the New England Patriots on the final regular season game of New England's undefeated season? So they're playing on Sunday night. New England runs the table, goes undefeated. They beat the Giants, but the Giants had nothing to play for, and they played everybody. Hmm. And they played that game down to the wire. New England pulled off the 16-0 regular season, but the Giants sent a message. And when they met again in the Superb Owl a few weeks later, they beat them, right? So I think, I don't know, if I'm Jason Moss, and I've got a temper like Jason Moss, so I feel like we might be buddies in that way. I dress everybody. I tell them to go kick Winnipeg's ass, and you go from there. Because now you have an opportunity to send Winnipeg potentially to the West. So you have a chance to send a veteran-laden team for one more playoff game.
Yeah.
Right? You beat them. There's a really good chance Saskatchewan's beating Calgary because Calgary's got nothing to play for, and Saskatchewan has everything to play for, right? So if you're Montreal, you have a chance to send Winnipeg to the West semi, where they will play who knows what BC is going to be. You have a chance to send a Saskatchewan team that's drastically up and down on any given week to, you know, a bye week and then playing at home, and who knows the pressures of that. I think you do it. Like, I really do if I'm Montreal. And it pains me as a Bomber fan because I want to see nobody. I want to see everybody on their one game injured list. Like, I want some kid out of Laval making his first start at quarterback. I know they have other backup quarterbacks, but go sign whoever's starting for Laval. Put him in. Let's go. But yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see Montreal do that in 2 weeks. And yeah, that's about the only interest that there really is left. And I think Montreal could definitely send a message, just as BC has sent a message going, yeah, we give up.
Mm-hmm. The other sort of interesting thing that happened over the weekend that I want to talk about a little bit was a halftime segment the Paul Appelese ran during the Calgary Edmonton game on CTV. Boy, they planned that one real well. To their credit, this week the only game that matters is actually on CTV, so that one worked out at least. But it was interesting. So Paul Appelese's, you know, what he wanted to talk about at that halftime, at least through part of it, was going into the playoffs, what can the BC Lions and the Saskatchewan Roughriders do better to sort of make a run? Because I mean, everyone, there's no there's it's pretty obvious what Winnipeg needs to do in order to succeed.
Yes.
Their game plan is pretty cut and dry in how they win football games.
Yes.
I don't remember what he said about BC, but anyway, for the Riders, the second thing he said, we'll get back to the first in a second. The second thing he said, of course, is run the football better. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. There's
absolutely no question about that. The other part, though, was talking about having to make more field goals. And this screamed of a guy looking at some numbers and just sort of taking stuff out of context. Because, yeah, I believe last week the Riders may have had the worst field goal percentage in the league, if not at least second worst or something like that.
Yeah.
They've since moved up to seventh. They're at 82.3, mm-hmm. ahead of Winnipeg, who is apparently a field goal machine, and Edmonton. And the other interesting thing, if you think about it, since the game against Montreal, Brett Lowther has only missed one field goal.
Yep.
And it was like that 60-plus yard bomb at the end of the Labor Day Classic that was kind of a Hail Mary chance to try to win or tie that game or whatever the situation was.
Yeah.
And into the little bit of a breeze, and he missed it. And that's the only miss he's had since that game against Montreal. So with that in mind, Brett Lowther is now tied for second in total field goals made. After the game he had this week, he kicked another six of them. Heading into the Labor Day Monday game, Brett Lowther technically led the league, at least tied with Liram Hirilahu, for total field goals made at 51. Lewis Ward kicked a few. He's back up in the top of the lead at 52, but I don't know. Doesn't seem like field goal kicking is much of an issue for this team right now when Brett Lowther's made everything under the sun in the last number of weeks and has now made some of the most kicks in the league since that horrific start to the season.
I'm going to give you a super sad or meaningless number here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Brett Lowther has missed 11 field goals this year.
Yeah.
Six are against the Montreal Alouettes. Super sad, meaningless number.
Meaningless number. It's coincidence.
I'm going to go super stat. I think Montreal knows something or is doing something differently, maybe in their coverage and their pressure. Or there's something on special teams that throws them off. And
maybe if it was like four of them, but like the four missed game was just a complete fluke.
Right. But I mean, a couple weeks before that, he was 3 for 5 against the Alouettes. When in every other game, I know Brett Lowther starts slow. That is who Brett
every Lowther year we have this conversation where it's like, oh, Brett Lowther is, you know, he's struggling right now. Is it time to bring someone else in? Is it time to cut him? Is it time to do whatever? And by the end of the year, he's one of the best kickers in the league.
He only missed, even with the slow start, he didn't miss more than one field goal in any game, except the first and second times he played Montreal.
Yeah.
So again, if you factor in, you know, maybe he's got a bit of the yips against Montreal. That's still a guy that has only missed, you know, you take out Montreal, you've only missed 5 field goals against the rest of the league, and again, has not missed more than one in any game except the 2 against Montreal.
So, and he scored the most points in the league now.
Exactly. Although I always find that points scored in football is always a goofy number to me. But
it is a goofy number, but it shows how consistent he's continued to be at point after attempts.
Right.
Throughout this whole thing, and despite the misses, the guy's still coming up big with a lot of kicks. So, I mean, like that 6 against BC was obviously big. He had the 7 field goal game against someone else a few weeks ago. Like this, the guy is clearly dialed in now. So,
well, yeah, 6 against BC, including all 3 converts too. So basically he made 9 field goals, because now that the convert is so far back, it's a real test. It's not that old 20-yard chip shot it used to be, right?
Yeah.
So it's, I'm curious, and it's sad. You won't see this again until obviously a potential Grey Cup matchup, but I just find it fascinating that there's something about Montreal that he missed kicks again, and that leads to all the panic and everything in Rider Nation. And this is just what this guy do. He takes a little bit to get warmed up. So, but you're right. Like, it screams of, you know, I prep my ass off for broadcast. Like, all jokes aside, do I prep a lot for this podcast? No. No, exactly. But I can guarantee you, when I crack a mic and I go on air anywhere, I'm prepped, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, they're paying you to do a job professionally.
100%, right? So to cop out, and put it this way, we were able to punch a hole in that Brett Lowther theory during the 15-minute preamble we typically have before we do this recording, right? Like, I like Lapo. I like him as a broadcaster.
And I think that's what gets me more is, like, there's a few other guys on that panel. If they say that, I just kind of roll my eyes and say whatever.
Davis Sanchez.
Yeah, like I'm Jim Barker. Like I expect better from Lapo.
Yeah, yeah.
I expect him to understand the context of that a little better.
But that being said, with the way the team has looked when healthy, what do they do better? We've pointed out.
I mean, obviously, running the football remains that.
100%. There's no disagreement there. But in terms of a second thing, right? The defense has been inconsistent, but with Roland Milligan Jr. in there, has been fantastic, right?
Yeah.
You've got a good field goal kicker. You've got like, I don't know, like this is this Riders team. I'm not saying oh they're the greatest thing ever, but there's nothing that stands out that they do that's great, and there's nothing that they stand out that they do on the other end is terrible, other than running the football, right?
I guess it kind of goes into with running the football, but it's closing out a close football game,
right?
Remains the thing that sticks out to me a little bit. I would like to see the defense give up fewer big plays, but that's just kind of how they play.
Right.
And I mean, and quite frankly, I'm not as worried about that going into the West playoffs. And if they got to the Grey Cup, it's certainly going to be a concern.
Yes.
I think Winnipeg and BC busting a few large plays isn't necessarily going to turn anything into a blowout.
No. Because I mean, the popgun offense both of them have had lately, right? So it's funny though, like, and as I think as we talk about it, and yeah, maybe Paul just looked at the numbers, but then the counter argument, and I know you do this with your columns, and I do this with what I bring up on air for broadcasting. Sometimes your producers are like, we need something with a number on. You can't be vague, right?
Yeah.
And outside of, I'm not saying that not closing out games is vague, but they're like, we want something with numbers, give us numbers. And that can happen at times.
It's possible,
right?
Yeah.
So it just, because yeah, everything else we kind of talk about is not tracked anywhere, and is kind of vague concepts like, hey, close out games better, don't give up big plays, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe as a broadcaster, I'm hoping that's it. I'm hoping Paul was kind of backed into a corner, because you're right. I expect better. I don't expect him to send shirtless photos of himself to anybody's wives on the panel.